Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. This week, we're talking about something fun, craft brewing and craft distilling. You have probably noticed that New Mexico has more brew pubs than ever, and now small distilleries are starting to pop up too. Many people think this is great. It gives us new places to meet friends for a cocktail or a beer after work or relax after a bike ride on the weekend. And people in the industry say their businesses are doing a lot to create new jobs and contribute to the state's economy. At the same time, critics worry that alcohol-based businesses contribute to our state's problem with drunk driving and cost more money overall than they contribute. My guests this morning include Tasha Zonsky-Armijo. She's the general manager of Jubilation Wine and Spirits, which specializes in local beer and spirits. Good morning and thank you.
Good morning, Glenn. Thank you for having us.
We also have Alana Jones. She is the general manager at Santa Fe Brewing and one of the directors of the New Mexico Brewers Guild. Good morning, Alana. Hi. Well, I'm so glad you could join us from Denver, where I understand you're judging a beer competition.
I am. So 8 a.m. I'm here.
Okay. You're taking your job seriously. We also have Colin Keegan. He's the owner of Santa Fe Spirits, a craft distillery. Welcome to the show, Colin.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Alana, I'm going to start with you. Santa Fe Brewing Company is the biggest of New Mexico's beer companies, if I'm right. You make the iconic Happy Camper IPA that's in my fridge right now. It's the one in the the one in the yellow can with the bright red Zia symbol. So aside from giving people, you know, a tasty beer and a cool can, how does Santa Fe Brewing contribute to New Mexico's economy?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, we are undergoing a big expansion right now, and it's millions of dollars that we're putting into local construction companies and you know, equipment, also creating new jobs. So there's kind of the tangible, you know, impact there, but we also do just tons of local sponsorships, and pretty much anyone who approaches us with a good cause, we're willing to help out however we can, and whether it's donating product or you know, money, cash sponsorships. We're actually having our October Fiesta in a couple of weeks, and that is all the proceeds from the glassware that we sell go to three local nonprofits that people vote on Facebook and stuff. So we do a ton.
How many employees do you have up there?
About 60.
Well, that's a lot for Santa Fe, isn't it? Colin,
that includes Albuquerque also, but yeah.
Oh, right, right. Colin, you started with an apple brandy from the orchards around your house, but now your company also makes whiskey and vodka, gin, and some interesting liqueurs. I often see your stuff on cocktail menus in the fancy restaurants in Santa Fe that I have to go review. Who are your biggest customers for these locally made spirits?
I think really it would be what is generally known these days, although I don't like to label the groups, but they're hipsters. to categorize them as an age group. I mean, they are sort of typically the 30-somethings that enjoy going out, meeting folks. It's probably a similar demographic to who Santa Fe Brewing Company would aim at. A foodie group that likes to support local, mm-hmm. But also likes to have a nice handmade, either beer in their case or whiskey in our case, or local wine as well. Our age range does range, obviously, because it's alcohol, from sort of mid-20s all the way up to octogenarians. I mean, we cover the whole gamut, but the large portion we see in our tasting rooms would be in their mid-30s, young professionals, I would say.
So you do have tasting rooms. How much of your business is drinks over the counter there, and how much is bottles that you sell at liquor stores or in the tasting rooms?
We have about 35% of our income that comes from the two tasting rooms that we have, one in the distillery and one downtown. A large amount of the other sales are off-premise, which would be liquor stores. And then a growing percentage is, as you mentioned, you know, high-end cocktails in high-end cocktail bars.
Well, I know that, you know, when I go to other cities, if I look at their cocktail menu and there's some local wine or local beer or local spirit that they make, I'm like, that's the thing I have to have, even if it sounds kind of weird. And you guys have a smoked...
mesquite smoked whiskey.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Every product we have is pretty regional.
Right.
They all tie back to Santa Fe in some way. From our gin, which is all local botanicals, to our whiskey, which is mesquite smoked, different from the peat that the Scots use.
Right. Tasha, I recently read that your top-selling spirit at Jubilation, which is blocks away from here,
yes,
is Taos Lightning Rye Whiskey. Is that right?
That is correct, because we do a really awesome Jubilation exclusive single barrel program and with some of the local distilleries. And it is definitely one of our number one sellers because we, first of all, have a lot of tourists that come to our store, and the first thing they ask is, what do you have local? They're so interested in everything. And we're like, oh, we have some really cool things, and we start showing them all our barrel selections, and yeah, absolutely. People are really, really into the rice. It's
and
really great.
That stuff's not cheap, right?
It's not, but you have a quality product. It's won national awards. It's got national recognition. You know what? They just want to know that they're going to get a quality product, and price really is not really any consideration at that point if they can know that they're going to get a quality product.
I know I have several bottles of local spirits on my bar, and I'm always really excited when people come to visit. I'm like, you have to try this.
Yes,
there's some, you know, Kettle One behind that. But no, you have to try this. This is from here. It's kind of cool. You have to try
Absolutely.
It.
They don't think of New Mexico. I mean, they're starting to believe and know because they see all the awards that we're getting in a lot of the national festivals for beer and for spirits and even wine. And so they are starting to come. Oh, we heard that you're known for this, that New Mexico is known for this. And plus, we have some great botanicals that are used that are, you know, only known to New Mexico or we're known for, like
it's
lavender and pinon and et cetera. So that's really, really amazing.
Listeners, we are talking about New Mexico's booming craft brewing and distilling industries, so we want to know what you think. Is this a great thing for our state? Should we do more to support local brew pubs and distilleries, or should we proceed cautiously? What do you think? Call us now, toll-free, 877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. You can also email us at callinshow@kunm.org. Tasha, you know, I have noticed, you said we're not really known for craft distilling, but they're pretty new. So,
Absolutely. Yeah,
I think a lot of people still don't know how much is out there.
Definitely.
But at the same time that that's been growing, we've seen a lot more competition for your business.
Absolutely.
I know, you know, Total Wine is out there and it's huge, like a Walmart
Absolutely.
Of booze. How do you compete with things like Total Wine?
Sure. So, you know, we are very lucky in the sense that we are near Knob Hill. We're near the university. We're near downtown. We're near... really, those folks are local supporters. They support us. And in turn, we definitely give the best customer service that we can. We go the extra mile. If anyone needs anything that we, for some reason, do not carry or they cannot find, we do the research for them. We personal service is really why they come to us, and the fact that we have such great neighborhood support for local businesses. I am third generation in the business, and we feel like that's what my grandfather built this business on, was customer service. He did this over 75 years ago, and that still continues to this day. And yes, we do a lot of unique things with having that single barrel program with the local distilleries. And in turn, we send those barrels that we do have, once we're done with them, we send them to local breweries. And we do, they do some incredible beers for us that they bottle for us. So we the trend keeps going. If we can give back what we've been given, that's what's important to us. And that's how we can continue to do that in this. And the support is wonderful.
Alana, you know, speaking of growth in and competition, all of this increase in craft brewing in New Mexico is happening at the same time that, you know, the big beer companies are getting even bigger. Just a couple weeks ago, we learned that Anheuser-Busch is taking over Miller in a $100 billion deal that will make it the biggest beer company in the world, and it will sell almost a third of the world's beer. That's a pretty big deal. How do you compete against that monstrosity?
well, we don't. We are really appealing to, I think, a different crowd. We try to tell a story. You know, we try to be unique and accessible, and it's really about education and just reaching out to people who don't necessarily think of craft beer, and trying to get them to taste something and find something that they like. And that's one festival at a time, one liquor store tasting at a time. And it's been a slow process. I mean, I remember when I started in the industry 10 years ago, nobody knew what a nut brown was or an IPA was. I had to explain it to every single person who came into the bar or we met at a festival. So,
and now they want to know.
They want their Imperial IPAs, and they want their sour beers. So it's just grown immensely, and I think we just need to continue educating people and exposing people to great beer.
Colin, I want to ask you, how have local and state governments made it easier for you to compete? I know you just opened you broke ground on a big new facility. How did the government make that easier for you?
It was mostly a funding issue. We applied for a local economic development grant, and were successful, luckily for us. There's quite an amount of paperwork to do for this, which is pretty onerous, but we have a good staff that don't mind dotting their I's and crossing their T's and all the paperwork. But it really gave us a leg up to build a warehousing facility. That means we can store the products that we're making and actually buy things in larger bulk. If you have to buy container loads of bottles of glass before you put your whiskey in, you need somewhere to put it. With seven different products, you've got seven different container loads. So you need somewhere to put that. And also aging a product for 3 years, which is quite onerous to hold that inventory. The government giving us the money towards the facility means that we don't have to sort of fork out that money as well as make the inventory at the same time.
Folks, we have a call from Antonio in Los Alamos. Antonio, good morning and welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's nice to be here. So one thing about the craft brewing and beer brewing industry that gives me pause in the state is that we're also known very well for high drunk driving fatalities and have a reputation as having a large drunk driving problem in our state. And I'm wondering how Colin and Alana feel about, because there's been the proposed increase in taxes on distilleries and breweries, and I'm wondering how they would feel if that increased tax revenue went specifically to public transportation so that we could continue to encourage the brewing and bottling industry, because I think it's fantastic for the state economy. But I want to know where they stand on also pushing forward for public safety as a whole, since public transportation is something in the state that is kind of lacking.
Antonio, thank you for that question. I'm going to rephrase it just and put it to you guys. How would you feel about a tax on alcohol that went specifically to public transportation, more buses, you know, light rail, something like that, that would help people get to and from your brew pubs and tasting rooms without having to drive there? Alana?
Okay. First of all, great question. I think that's something that everyone has been thinking about. I have a couple of things to say. First, the craft industry is it's a family-oriented industry. It's not appropriate to come to our bars and get really drunk and go drive away. I have my kids at my work a lot. We just hosted a fundraiser for my son's school, and it was bands and music and all the parents and their kids and people drinking beer responsibly. And that's what the craft industry is about, is responsible consumption. But the excise tax increase. Now, first of all, I also don't think that it really works that way, that all the money will actually go to something. I mean, the DWI fund has been pilfered for many years. They just need a little money over here for something else, and they just go to that DWI fund. So I would be doubtful that any money would set aside would actually 100% go to the intention.
And the proposal that we'll be talking about a little later in the show is not to spend that money on public transportation. It is exactly to put it into the DWI fund where, as you say, it kind of ends up going here and there. We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, we want to hear more from you. Are you happy with the number of brew pubs and tasting rooms in your area? Are you happy about the new local selections in your local bottle shop? Or do you think there are too many? Let us know. The number is toll-free, 877-899-5866. That's 877-899-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or follow us on Twitter at KUNM News. We will be right back.
Support comes from the 8th Annual Santa Fe Independent Film Festival, Santa Fe's premier film event, October 19th through the 23rd. More than 100 films and events in downtown Santa Fe. Tickets at santafeindependent.com.
Support comes from the Outpost Performance Space, presenting saxophonist Steve Lehman's acclaimed trio with Matt Brewer bass and Damon Reed drums, Thursday, October 6th, 7:30 p.m. at Outpost. Info at outpostspace.org. Come to the opening reception for Decade, an exhibition and series of programs celebrating the 10th anniversary of 516 Arts, downtown Albuquerque's flagship contemporary arts venue. Decade features a lineup of past 516 artists exploring themes of the environment, street art, new media, and more. Saturday, October 15th, 6 to 8 p.m. at 516 Central Southwest. Enjoy Le Chat Lunatique food and brews. Details at 516arts.org. A message from the tax-exempt 516 Arts.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. I'm here with Tasha Zonsky-Armijo of Jubilation Wine and Spirits, Alana Jones with the Santa Fe Brewing Company, and Colin Keegan, who owns Santa Fe Spirits. We were just talking before the break about some proposals to spend some of the tax money, and we'll get to that more in this hour. But first, I want to talk to Sam in Santa Fe. He is on the phone, and he wants to talk about gentrification. Good morning, Sam. Do we have Sam? Maybe we need to hold on for a minute and see if we can get him back on the phone. Let me put this to you, Alana. The issue of gentrification, we were talking earlier, you know, Colin said that his customers are hipsters. And that does, you know, make us think it costs a lot more to buy a fancy local craft brewed or distilled thing than it does something made by Anheuser-Busch, Miller, whatever the name is going to be of that thing. Is there an issue with gentrification here that these things are not so accessible to people who don't have as much money?
No, I don't believe so. I think beer maybe is a little bit different from spirits because the price differences are not as huge. You know, you're talking about a dollar or two more a six pack generally. Obviously, sometimes the big guys can cut their prices a little more, but that also. I know we keep trying to get away from this tax issue, but it kind of hits back to that where that's really a key that if we were paying this huge increase in excise tax that has been proposed, it would put us at such a great disadvantage price-wise. We would have to really increase our prices on the shelves, and then you're talking about a lot of people just going back to the cheaper stuff because the big guys can handle that hit on their margins and the little guys can't, and that would really halt any sort of reinvestment in our businesses and expansion of the brewing industry in New Mexico with local companies, and you just end up with the big guys getting all that money instead.
Thank you for that. We have Aaron on the phone right now in Albuquerque. Aaron, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
What do you want to share with us this morning?
I was just going to agree with the proposed tax hike in that where they're going to hit the craft breweries. I do support craft breweries, and a lot of craft breweries have, you know, drink limits. And as everyone has said before, the DUI issue that we have in New Mexico cannot really be, you know, it's difficult to tie that back to craft breweries because the people that are going there to enjoy, they're going there to socialize, and they're not going there to get drunk and you know, the repeat DUI offenders here in Albuquerque.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think when we talk about the DWI issue, we talk about people who are chronic alcoholics. They come from a cross section of society for sure, but they don't always fit the image of someone who's buying a double imperial stout at the craft brewery with the playground. Although certainly that is possible. Listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you think that local brewers and distillers should pay higher taxes and that we should spend that money on something specific or on fighting DWI? Or are you worried that raising taxes on these guys will price many people out of these local products? Tell us what you think. The number here is 877-899-5866. That's 877-899-5866. Alana, we have to let you go in just a couple of minutes, so I want to ask you one more question, a couple more before you go. You know, Colorado has the third highest number of craft breweries in the country. That's 235 breweries in Colorado. One for about every 20,000 residents. New Mexico, you know, 10 years ago, we had only a handful. Now we have 63, which seems like so many. But our ratio is still one to every 30,000 residents. Is there room for more?
I think a lot of people are asking that question right now with every new brewery or brew pub that opens up. Yes, I think there's definitely room for more. You think about the amount of non-craft beer, domestic and imported beer that's consumed, and it's still, 85-90% in New Mexico. And so, yeah, we're still only at like 10% of the beer consumed in the state. I think we have a lot more room to grow there. But I think as consumers have more options, they're going to be a little more savvy and probably paying attention to quality a lot more. So I think the standard is going to be set higher, which is a good thing.
Also, we have a cluster in Albuquerque and a cluster in Santa Fe, but the rest of the state is not quite so saturated. In terms of craft distilleries, Colin, there are more than 50 craft distilleries in Colorado, and we have about half a dozen, maybe. What do you think it will take to grow craft distilling here in the way we've seen in Colorado?
Actually, the Colorado number is closer to 90.
Oh, my goodness.
And we have 9 craft distillery licenses in New Mexico, only 5 of which are active, but you're right, half a dozen. I think it takes real attention to, from the government side, to look at what raising taxes will do to small businesses here. And I'm obviously against that. I don't think it's just the craft industry that would suffer. I think the restaurant industries and all the rest of it would suffer as well from not having a nice range of products that people come to New Mexico to enjoy. It's partly from a government standpoint of actually looking to try and help small business. Their hands are tied by rules and regulations. We get that. I think we could see, I think we're going to see more craft distilleries coming up in New Mexico as the breweries were ahead of that, and even the wineries, you know, decades ago. But
and we're seeing some distillery, beer, brewery partnerships,
yeah,
where you can get one or the other at the same place.
Most definitely. I mean, three out of the 5 craft distillery licenses that are operating actually operate as a brewery and a distillery as well. That becomes very helpful, especially in your own tap room or tasting room, that you can serve wine, beer, and spirits. That's a real advantage. The liquor laws and the licenses that are here are very restrictive to people to start new restaurants. That's a totally different subject that would take a lot more than an hour to discuss, but it's difficult. I mean, it really is difficult to get into accounts and explain when they're looking at their bottom line so much, and they pay so much for a liquor license that it's very difficult for them to start adding a slightly higher price point. I think Alana made a good point that everybody says, oh, craft's ridiculously expensive. If you look at the range of craft products and the prices in the wine, beer, and spirits categories, it is only a couple of dollars more on each, you know, on a 6-pack or a bottle of liquor or a bottle of wine. And there's a perception out there, if you say craft or local, it's going to be expensive. There's a perception change, I think, that needs to happen as well.
We have Devante on the phone in Albuquerque. Devante, good morning and welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Devante, what did you want to share with us this morning?
So a few commenters brought up the discussion about the increase of the consumers feeling, you know, the excise tax, if it is to be implemented at the bar or wherever they consume. And the consumers will see about a 25% increase in, you know, your glass of wine, bottle of beer. But the big question is, as we know, New Mexico has a problem with DWI and alcohol-related health incidents. But is it the responsibility of the breweries to bear, you know, this cost in the wake of the emergence of this new developing field? The tax says that those over that produce over 200,000 barrels of alcohol and spirits will receive this tax. So to the commentators on the show, I'd also like to ask, would this discourage business from producing more than the 200,000 barrels? And could this tax also have the potential to keep this market at a very minimalist, you know, perspective because of this kind of ceiling that's imposed?
Devante, you've asked a bunch of good questions. Let me go to Tasha and ask you here about, you know, how much responsibility do people who make and sell booze bear for these problems?
So, you know, we do have a great responsibility because when they do, say, for instance, walk into Jubilation, we have to figure out if they are intoxicated, if they are at the point where we cannot sell them. You know, we are very lucky at our establishment. We do have a lot of great customers that we know that come in, you know, weekly and repeat customers. And so we don't really have that. But
there's a big punishment.
Absolutely.
If you do, right.
We have to be very diligent. We remind our employees on a daily basis that, yes, you do have to be very vigilant. You do have to be aware of what is, your customer is, what they're doing, how they're acting, how they're talking to you. You have to be responsible. And unfortunately, we are the ones that are punished if we do sell to someone that is intoxicated or underage. And the penalty used to be a lot greater before. It's been reduced, but it's a horrible experience. I mean, you get arrested on the spot, and it's an awful experience. We've had some employee, it happened, and it's not, and so that's why that responsibility. Yes, I mean we are, but we also feel that that we're at least the first line of defense at that point. And
Alana, I want to ask you the second of Devante's questions, which was, will raising taxes on brewers who make more beer encourage them to make less beer?
Yes. I do also want to quickly clear up a common misconception. The way the caller phrased his question, he was referring to the tax being levied, at the bar at the time of consumption per drink. And that's sort of the way that it's colloquially been presented. But in reality, it's an excise tax that's levied on the brewers for every gallon of beer that they brew and sell in New Mexico. So it's not actually the consumers paying for it on the spot. It's the brewers that are going to be out. Our taxes would go from under $200,000 a year to over $1 million with this proposal. So just think about how for a small business that's reinvesting every dollar every week, the kind of impact that going from, $150,000 a year to $1.5 million a year would have on our business. It would be devastating. So yeah, I think we would surely look to limit the number of sales that we have in the state of New Mexico. And I haven't heard anything about the 200,000 barrel limit. Right now we're the largest brewery in the state and we're at about 20,000 barrels. So I don't think that's actually...
Doesn't sound like it's a problem right now.
Yeah, but I don't think that they... I haven't heard anything about the limit there. But anyway, it would really discourage us from selling beer in New Mexico for sure.
A lot, and that's because the tax only applies to beer sold here. But if you sell it in Arizona or Colorado or Texas, you don't have to pay that.
Exactly.
Right. Alana, we know
we pay their state taxes.
You have to go judge beer competitions, so we will let
I
you
do.
Go. But thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a great discussion, and I'm just really excited about the growth of all of our industries, and it really is an awesome thing for New Mexico. So thank you.
Thank you. We have on the phone Sam in Albuquerque with the New Mexico Wine Growers Association. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Good morning. Thank you.
Sam, I want to say we intentionally did not talk about wine today because it is a little bit apples and oranges. Is that fair?
I would say to some degree, yes. However, we're all still in the same business together. We're all working together. Most of our members are small producers.
Right.
Just like yours. And we're all working together to create our own artisan products. And unlike, the big players who manufacture their beer or manufacture their wines and are able to distribute it nationwide on, economies of scale, we don't have that ability. We're buying at probably the most expensive, all of our inputs are probably at the most expensive you could actually get. And we're doing them by hand and essentially, with out of labor of love, because if we really got paid for what we put into the products, there'd be no way we could sell them.
Yeah, if we had to brew all the beer in New Mexico from grain grown in New Mexico, we'd make about 6 cans of beer. But, I happened to notice that Gruet, the sparkling wine house here, opened a new tasting room in Santa Fe. But for the most part, local wineries don't have the kind of public presence that breweries and now some of these distilleries have. It's almost all sold at Tasha's store or in restaurants and places like that. Am I right?
To a degree, you're right. Also, it is sold primarily at the festivals. because the distribution model at this point that we have is somewhat antiquated and is pretty rough on the wineries. If you look at the law, it's pretty draconian. If you as far as on behalf of the producers, that would include you guys too. So you know most of the smaller ones are doing self-distributing, and those that have gone into distribution, basically, when you go out and sell in the public, there is I think what we're finding is the cost to get into like restaurants and to get into the distribution houses outweighs the gains that you're going to receive.
Right.
You lose about two-thirds of you'll lose about a third of your general profit on it.
Sam,
so it's almost.
We do want to talk about wine on another show in the future, so we will come back to this topic. Right now, we need to take a break. We're going to, when we come back, talk more about this tax issue and how that might shake out. We want to ask you, would you be willing to pay 25 cents more per drink that you buy? Let us know. The number is toll-free, 877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. You can tag us in a tweet with your question at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
Want to give KUNM a great 50th anniversary present? How about donating your old car or truck? October is our anniversary month, so if you call now, it will be towed and sold, and we will get the proceeds before October ends. You will get a tax deduction and a KUNM membership, which entitles you to many benefits, including free admission to the Social Justice Fair. It takes just one call to 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Independent Vehicle Service, providing repair and maintenance on foreign cars for 35 years, congratulates KUNM on this milestone 50th anniversary.
Fall is a busy time for native hunters who provide moose, elk, ducks, and caribou for their family and communities. On the next Native America Calling, we take a look at what traditional native hunting looks like today. We also ask how game management and property lines play into modern hunting. We hope you can join us for this discussion.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. I am here with Tasha Zonsky-Armijo with Jubilation Wine and Spirits, Colin Keegan, who owns Santa Fe Spirits, and joining us now is Peter DeBenedetis, the director of a group called Alcohol Taxes Save Lives and Money. Peter, welcome. Did I say your name right?
Thank you. Thank you, Gwyneth. Yes.
Okay, good. Before we jump into this issue, we are going to raise it with a caller, Sarah, who is on the phone from Albuquerque. Sarah, what do you think about this liquor tax idea?
Well, you know, something I do like this taxes on the alcohol because, you know, it might have like less alcoholics like loitering all along Central and loitering at the bus stops, panhandling for money so they could go and buy more beer because it'll be more expensive to buy liquor. So, and then if this revenue is raised, we could put it towards DWI problems, you know?
Sarah,
As far as affecting the business, I don't know that aspect of it, you know?
Sarah, let me put your logic back to you. If someone has to panhandle to buy beer and we raise the price, won't they have to panhandle more?
Yeah, but they might get, you know, I just kind of think that they might get wore out and just give up. You know, that's the idea. They have to sit there and get panhandle and they have to work so hard to make more money. They're just like, well, maybe it's just better I just won't drink. That's the idea. It's the same kind of idea with the tobacco. You know, to get a pack of cigarettes has cost like, you have to pay like $5 in taxes. People just like, I'm better off just quitting. I'll just quit smoking. Then I don't have to pay for it. So that's my angle behind it. You know
Sarah,
what I mean?
Thank you very much for that. That is an interesting point. Although I'm think, and I have no idea how much cigarettes cost now, but they cost all about the same, don't they? I don't think we have quite the diversity of ranges between a natural light and a, you know,
there's some specialty cigarettes out there that are a little bit more expensive, but other than that, they're about $8 to $10 a pack.
What do I know? We have an email comment from Brian. He says he applauds the entrepreneurship of pub owners. They spend money, produce impressive products, and improve downtown areas. That is an interesting point. We've definitely seen that in downtown Albuquerque. But on the phone, we have Jan in Mountain Air, which does not look like downtown Albuquerque, does it, Jan?
No. We could sure use a good brew pub up here. If anybody would like to come up here and build one, that would be special. I just recently went to the Santa Fe tap room, and I watched it under construction there at Carlisle and I-40 in Albuquerque. I love it that they built it out of storage containers. I absolutely love it. I finally got there a couple weeks ago and had a wonderful time. It's great that they combined it with restaurants, because that way you're not just sitting and drinking. You can have some food to absorb it, and I have no problem paying 25 cents more for a beer if I think that tax is going to go someplace that's going to be beneficial. No problem whatsoever. Happy to do it.
Well,
and last thing, does anybody know what happened to the guy who was doing the brewing for Assets about 20-some years ago?
Oh, yes.
I miss the blueberry beer. I'd love to have it again. That's all.
Thank you so much for that, Jan. You dredged up a whole bunch of good stuff to talk about. And hey, if you're thinking of starting a brew pub, call Jan in Mountain Air, because she wants you there. Peter, we've just spent about 40 minutes talking about all the ways that craft brewing and distilling are growing, and we've talked about all the fun and cool things about them. Why should we raise taxes on them now?
So first of all, I want to say thank you for inviting me. And I really feel like a major buzzkill here. We just had a party, and now I have to come tell you the facts about what's going on. So please take it in the spirit it's meant. Here's the deal. Whether you drink or not in New Mexico, you pay $400 a year in extra taxes hidden in your gross receipts and personal income tax, because somebody has to pay for the extra police, the ambulances, the court cases, and the hospital care, the detention centers, $400 a year, whether you drink or not. Now, the current tax per drink, if you take that $800 million it costs the state and divide it by the cost per drink, it costs a dollar just in taxes to pay for that. So if somebody's getting sloshed at the bar next to you, shell out a dollar every time for them. The current tax on microbreweries for their first 10,000 gallons is 1 cent per drink. So we're subsidizing them 99%. Of course their business is booming. Of course they're growing a lot, because everybody else is paying for it while they get to keep all the profits.
Peter, let me pause there. We have a bunch of people on the phone. So let's hear from Gabby in Albuquerque. Gabby, do you think we should raise these taxes?
Yes, I do. And I think when I called in, I just told a similar story. I used to work for a very, very popular restaurant in Albuquerque, where several times a year there would be a company-wide raise for all the employees, usually 25 cents to a dollar. And that would usually mean an increase in our prices anywhere from 10 to 30 cents per item. And very regularly, we'd have to explain to people, they would ask why their price changed, because, you know, we sort of had regulars, and explaining to them that there was a company-wide raise, or that the money was going towards a specific purpose and was being used for these items. You know, obviously some people were upset, but many people were happy about it and were liked to at least know what the price difference meant in terms of the real world. And I think that, you know, consumers, we're all consumers, and when we have a product in our hand, whether it's a beer or food that we've just bought, we need to understand what it took to get that in our hands, and that sometimes paying a little more towards it is just better in the long run. And so I think it's more of making the consumers understand what the tax means and what it would be going towards and how it's going to help in the long run.
Gabby, thank you for that perspective. We also have on the phone Mariela in Santa Fe. Mariela, how do you think a higher tax would affect drunk driving problems?
Good morning. My opinion about this is that people with alcoholism actually don't go for the craft beers. They go for the Bud Lights and they go for the Michelob's. And taxing the local craft brewers is just going to punish the wrong number of people, the wrong demographic.
Okay. Peter, what do you think about that idea?
So if you look at drinking across the state, the caller assumes that only poor people cause these problems. That's not the case at all. There are many, many wealthy people. They don't drink as much when they drink, but they drink more frequently, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 a night, something like that. So this is going to be across the board. And there's been over 100 different cases across the country studied, and you see a direct correlation between price and consumption. By going 25 cents a drink, we're going to see about a 10% reduction in overall drinking, particularly among the problem drinkers because they're more price sensitive, i.e. panhandling, i.e. kids, that kind of stuff.
We have an email comment from Chris. She says, restrictions on liquor licenses and the rules about when bars and restaurants have to stop selling booze and close actually contribute to drunk driving problems here. She says she'd like to see businesses be required to stay open for 2 hours after they stop selling liquor and beer. I know 20-something me would have thought that was probably a good idea. I can't remember the last time I saw 4 o'clock in the morning. But Tasha, you want to jump in on that?
Yes,
point.
I was just wanting to say from our perspective, as far as retail, you know, this is a problem that has been going on for many, many years. They started with closing up the drive-up windows. Oh, after the drive-up windows close, there's going to be no DWI whatsoever. Well, really, I mean, that didn't do a thing. Now, you know, they have stings that SID performs on retail and bars, et cetera, that's going to now curb it because there's going to be, the establishments are now going to be responsible and that's going to be the line of defense and that's going to stop it. I mean, it seems never ending. It seems like it's now it just keeps building and building. And to me, it's a bigger problem that has sometimes little to do with craft beers and distilleries and local establishments. I mean, it's government, it's our court systems, it's, you know,
we've talked about a lot of problems like this on this show where there is just not one easy, like, oh, if we only did this, we wouldn't have this problem. Colin, I want to put this question to you. You know, you mentioned earlier in the show that Santa Fe Spirits just broke ground on a big new facility where you'll be storing things that will allow you to buy in bulk and you'll be aging some of your liquor there. You know, the tax breaks that have allowed you to grow, if we raised them now, how would that impact you?
Well, to be honest, we don't get any tax breaks. At the moment, the distilleries don't get them. The wineries and the breweries do get those. The distilleries are exempt from these tax breaks. I would like to talk about the taxes, backing up a little bit. As a federal excise tax, I think Peter's misinforming people here because the actual tax is going to be levied on the brewery. They're going to have to mark that up, and then the retailers are going to have to mark that up, and then the gross receipts will be based on a higher price. The 25% a drink at source is going to end up a lot closer to a dollar by the time it's on the bar. If it was a gross receipts tax, it would be direct to the public. So there is a misconception here that all these, you know, small businesses growing are getting some wonderful, wonderful tax breaks. But I think people are forgetting that liquor already is taxed 3 times. It's taxed federally. It's taxed at a state level, and it's taxed at a local level in gross receipts tax. So you're already paying about 38-40% in taxes on the beers that you're getting. And to talk about a different problem as well, the DWI issues here, the people who have a problem with alcohol are just going to find another way to get that alcohol, as would a drug addict. They're not going to say, oh, it's gone up a little bit in price, I better just stop. They have a problem that they can't just stop. Raising the taxes isn't going to affect them. It's going to affect the rest of the public. If I thought the money was going to go into a DWI fund, it would be a bit more palatable. It's not. It's going to go into a general fund because Peter's probably proposing something that is meant with the best of intentions. But what it's going to do to the craft industry is make it very difficult. the big guys who are selling the Budweisers, as Amaliella pointed out, there's a lot more DWIs that are caused with low-end liquors, which the big guys are producing. They're not going to get affected by this particularly, but you are going to see it very detrimental to small businesses around here. It's an unfortunate view that there's some people here who are successful in New Mexico. Let's just tax them a bit more. Part of a larger economic development problem I think we need to look at, but that's probably a different show.
Thank you for that. Peter, I want to put this last question to you. You say half of New Mexicans don't drink, but they pay taxes to subsidize the excessive drinkers, which are a minority. But there are many New Mexicans who do drink responsibly.
About 30%.
30% who do. Why should we punish them by raising these taxes?
You're calling it punishment? I'm asking people to pay their way. See, you hear this from the industry a lot. Oh, we just don't know what to do. It's such a big problem. There's no solution. But we'll keep all the profits we make off this big problem. So you hear that a lot. The Centers for Disease Control, it's very clear. This is the most effective way to solve those problems. It's not going to get everything, but it's going to put people causing the problems to pay for it. Now, Colin talked about the pass-through. He said it's going to be a 4-to-1 pass-through. We waive it 25 cents a drink. It'll be an extra dollar. Nationally, it's about a 2-to-1 pass-through. We're okay with that. But do you understand? They keep the extra money in their pocket and laugh all the way to the bank.
Peter, thank you so much for that. I hate to break it off there. I could do this for another hour, but we have to wrap it up. I want to thank you for coming in. I know you had an early morning at the Balloon Fiesta, Peter, so we appreciate you stopping by over here. Tasha Azansky-Armijo of Jubilation, thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Colin Keegan with Santa Fe Spirits, thank you so much for talking with us this morning.
Thank you.
You can find more information about all of these issues on our website, KUNM.org. If you missed any of the program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. If you have comments you want to share, email them to us, callinshow@KUNM.org. You can find us on Facebook. Just look for KUNM Radio or follow the newsroom on Twitter @KUNM News. Tune in next Thursday morning at 8. We'll be talking about how this year's election is tapping into tensions around race, gender, and class. That's next Thursday morning at 8 on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks to Marino Spencer, who engineered the show today. Anna Landy screened your calls. Sarah Trujillo assisted with production. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and I'm Gwyneth Doland. Thank you.